You mentioned Modi. You're not a fan. He doesn't
put
come out.
Politely.
Does not come out of the book well. Has he been as bad as you would have feared?
Yes, because today you're looking at a situation where
performance versus polarization. What do you think is more important, and why? What do you think voters ultimately decide? You've got experience in Assam, Tripura. We're in West Bengal right now. What do you think matters more?
I mean, ideally, I would like to say performance. But the reality is, why you win an election or lose one, I think is very multifaceted, and there are many factors. I think any politician would like to be judged when they go to a vote on the basis of their performance. But I'm sad to say that polarization is the harsh reality of Indian politics today.
Honestly, with the heart, I don't think there's too much polarization happening right now.
Polarization is the culprit.
It's a big culprit. And it's happening across. It's happening on social media. It's happening on your bloody WhatsApp groups here. You know, I'm an old person, so I'm a member of a lot of WhatsApp groups. And you see the fighting which happens before every election.
Since the late 19th century, the primary source for political and societal polarization in India has been a fundamental question of nationhood. Should India be a secular country or a Hindu Rashtra, given that roughly 80% of the population is Hindu? Although the political hegemony of the secular pluralist Congress Party tempered polarization over this issue until the 1970s, the rising prominence of Hindu nationalist organizations in the recent decades has sharply increased tensions. Divisive political leadership, coupled with India's economic transformation, changes in the media landscape with the rise of competitive caste politics has steadily brought polarization to a boil. Particularly since the landslide electoral victories of the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party in 2014 and 2019, the consequences of severe polarization have grown ever more worrisome. Partisan attacks on India's independent political institutions have intensified. Opposition parties have become extremely wary of defending pluralism and secularism, and hatred and violence against minority communities have flared up. The coronavirus pandemic has eased this polarization on the surface by engendering more unifying political leadership. Yet, at the societal level, the crisis has only amplified intolerance, particularly against India's Muslim minority community. Although various actors have launched efforts to counter the country's majoritarian turn and improve civic dialogue, polarization in India is more toxic today than it has been in decades, and it shows no signs of abating. The divide between secular and Hindu nationalist visions of national identity forms a central axis of polarization in India today. This is not to ignore polarization based on differences in caste, class, language, or religion. However, these cleavages are more important at the subnational level because no one group is able to predominate nationally. Polarization along these axes thus have never posed an existential threat to Indian democracy, with the exception of one major episode between 1975 and 1977, when the government of Prime Minister Indira Gandhi suspended basic rights for 21 months, a dark chapter in country's astounding democratic journey. The significance of other episodes of polarization, notwithstanding the divide over Hindu nationalism, is seriously endangering liberal freedoms and pluralist democracy in India today. The current wave of polarization has its root in the colonial period and the two clashing visions of the idea of India that emerged then. One strain of thinking envisioned India as a secular nation in which membership was defined not by one's faith, but by one's place of birth. The most important prominent of the view of was Mahatma Gandhi, the principal leader of the Indian independence movement and a president of the Congress Party. Though a devout Hindu himself, Gandhi viewed the Indian nation as a harmonious collection of the religious communities that deserved to be treated as equals. other prominent Congress leaders, including Jawaharlal Nehru, India's first Prime Minister, also firmly opposed Hindu nationalism. In sharp contrast to Gandhi and Nehru's vision, Hindu nationalists argued that Hindu culture defined Indian identity and that minorities needed to assimilate by accepting the strictures of this majority culture. In a landmark 1923 book, Hindutva, Who is a Hindu?, the conservative leader and revolutionary V.D. Savarkar coined the term Hindutva, which means Hindu nationalism, to challenge the secular conception of Indian nationhood propounded by Gandhi and Nehru. Pro-Hindutva political activists turned Savarkar's idea into a mass movement in 1925 by founding the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, a paramilitary volunteer organization dedicated to promoting Hindu nationalism. The RSS became the fountainhead of Hindu nationalist movement, rallied support from a network of sister organizations known as the Sangh Parivar. The tension between these competing conceptions of Indian nationhood has continued to drive polarization in the post-colonial India. Even though divisions over Indian national identity have long festered, Hindu nationalism did not become a politically ascended force until the late 1980s. Since then, political leadership and especially the polarizing tactics of BJP have brought polarization to dangerous levels today. Although the bloody partition of India and Pakistan in 1947.
वो बड़ा खौफ का आलम होता था उस वक्त. एक तो सरे शाम ही सन्नाटा छा जाता था. कोई शख्स कोई चीज बाहर नजर नहीं आती थी.
Life in that village was very good. And you start to miss all that. You start to think about what was it like over there. You start to dream about it. I still dream about it. And when I'm talking to you, the picture of my village is moving in my head. So that trauma with time has increased.
The hegemony of Congress Party moderated polarization and kept Hindu nationalism from occupying center stage in national politics. Gandhi's assassination by an associate of RSS in 1948 made the organization very unpopular and considerably dented its polarizing appeal. The able leadership of Nehru, who served as Prime Minister between 1947 and 1964, further tempered polarization. As a big tent or catch-all party that had united diverse groups around the struggle for Indian independence, the Congress Party initially enjoyed unquestioned political dominance, and it used its power to advance a secular, broadly inclusive version of India. That said, the politics of the Congress Party should not be idealized. In significant ways, its failings set the stage for the rise of Hindu nationalism. At times, the Congress practiced in the form of pseudo-secularism, manipulating religion when it benefited the party and using religious minorities as a vote bank rather than treating them as genuine constituencies. The party lost power for the first time in 1977 after the entire political opposition united against autocratic maneuvers of Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. Let's talk about the driving forces of polarization in India. There are three crucial drivers of increasing polarization in India. First, India's ongoing economic transformation. Second, changes in traditional and social media. And third, the rise of competitive caste politics. Hindu nationalist organizations have been able to harness the power of each of these drivers in a way that their opponents have found difficult to match. First, let's talk about India's ongoing economic transformation. India's economic transformation over the past three decades is the least debated driver of today's polarization. Starting in 1991, a Congress-led government pursued a program for economic liberalization that reshaped the Indian economy, accelerating urbanization and creating a sizable middle class. paradoxical. However, the Congress Party's reforms proved a huge boon for their identity politics of the BJP, as an urban voters tend to be more rather than less supportive of Hindu nationalist narratives. Urbanization has transformed Hinduism more than any other development. In the village you live together, you can't miss the muezzin or the bells of the temples, and you have syncretic mixed cults. When you go to the city, that's over. Let's talk about how social media and the change in traditions of people has impacted polarization. One of the most important driving forces in the whole change of scenario in India and the increasing polarization that we see today is social media. Undoubtedly social media that I would put to number one on this list. Changes in the media landscape have also fanned the flames of polarization, particularly in the past decade. In the realm of traditional media, biased or partisan leaning outlets have become increasingly influential at the expense of non-partisan news sources. Changes in media ownership likely have played a role in this transformation, as more and more Indian media outlets have been acquired by business houses. In this changing media ecosystem, profit-driven organizations openly support particular parties and sensationalize minor issues to create false binaries or divisions. Compounding these effects, social media has accelerated the pace at which misinformation and propaganda spread. WhatsApp in particular has emerged as a favored tool for disseminating misinformation to foment intercommunal discord. Furthermore, many parties have acted quickly and skillfully to exploit social media to promote its majoritarian message. Can people trust and depend on social media as a news source? Can we reduce polarization to some extent by not trusting social media as much as we do? Though social media has become almost an inevitable part of our society now, we can't always depend on it. The spreading of misinformation in social media is not new. Every day we read bunches of things online on social media, which may happen to be true, but often it's not the case. This false or misinformation always leads to fake news, consistent or fabricated stories without any verifiable facts, sources or quotes. Those stories are forged to influence readers' own opinions or to deceive them. The question of fake news refers to the point of how to think about the nature of real news. In the last few years, the number of fake news stories have increased via social media platforms like WhatsApp, Facebook, YouTube, etc., because they shared online faster than we can ever imagine. There have been varied uses of the term fake news in different reporting of news during the second half of 2016, which is almost, how many years by far now? Almost 7 years. The term was searched tremendously by people shown in Google Trend Map. Most of the time, fake news conflates three different notions: misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. Misinformation are false information about when a person conveys it and believes that it is true and shares. The second one is disinformation, in those which are shared intentionally by a person after knowing that it is true. On the other hand, information based on reality but imposes harm on a person, organization or a country is termed as malinformation. After putting all of them together, we call it fake news. This information disorder consists of different forms like satire, false connection, misinterpretation of facts, imposter content, manipulated content, fabricated content, memes. There are mainly two reasons for sharing fake news on social media. Some people spread it for political, ideological, or business interests. Some also spread it for fun. But they do it with an intention. However, again, fake news is shared without knowing it's fake by some people, but with a motive. The motive can be varied from person to person. Few of them think sharing the information before others gives them a sense of pride. while others think they must let people know about the importance of the news, and some commit it for fun.
Why is our email, why are our texts, why are snaps, why is everything filled with such garbage?
There's just so much out there right now. I don't even think most people realize how much their brain has to handle. 400 hours of video uploaded to YouTube per minute. 500 million tweets sent per day.
The continued controversy over fake news, misinformation, and hate speech on the internet is forcing social media companies like Twitter, Facebook, and Google to take steps to more closely evaluate and monitor the content on their sites. Twitter has long grappled with complaints that some users repeatedly post